Hello, and welcome to another jury-rigged episode of Meanwhile the Comics Podcast. I'm Dave Belmore.
And I'm T. Campbell, finding new and ingenious ways to make Dave suffer.
Oh, well, yeah. Is that what you do every night? I mean, am I that important? That's kind of cool, really, to know that I take up that much of your time every day.
Yeah. It's slowly getting harder, but I've got a fair amount of material still to get through here.
Oh, good.
Tonight we're doing this cast later than usual because I took forever to get back to my recording studio, even though I currently live 5 hours ahead of Dave.
Right, and his recording studio would be in front of his room with the door closed. My favorite part of this morning, though, was getting an email from T, who previously unannounced says, "Hey Dave, I'm going to be running late today. You may want to run your errands in the morning." I wake up, slightly disgruntled and blurry-eyed because I hadn't put in my contacts yet, grunted and decided to shift my entire schedule for today to the morning. So just right as I'm starting my errands, I get a phone call from T, who's looking to record.
Well, I didn't think that I'd be able to use Skype where I was. It turned out that I was able to use Skype where I was, and I thought that maybe I could catch you, because as I have had many occasions to discover, you very rarely struggle to consciousness significantly before noon.
Well, I only manage to do that when it matters, apparently.
Apparently so. Anyway, we're going to do a cast today that frankly we should have done months ago, but one thing led to another, one thing being the complete destruction of Dave's old laptop.
I blame the maids. I think they dropped it.
Another thing being the seeming incompatibility of Hot Recorder with Skype for about a week.
Which turned out to be not be an incompatibility.
Yeah, we're just kind of struggling through all kinds of incompetence and difficulty that's not really our fault, which I wish I could link in a magnificent segue to the theme of this movie, but that's pretty much every movie ever made. This movie is about a repressive society and one kind of crazy, kind of superhuman figure's struggle against it.
The movie we're talking about is V for Vendetta, so spoiler warnings on the entry to this website, spoiler warnings here, spoiler warnings there, spoiler warnings everywhere. Lions and tigers and spoiler warnings, because we figure it's been so long since this movie actually came out. If you haven't seen it and you're listening to the podcast, well, then I don't know what to say.
I don't know if we can help you.
Although what I do miss is being able to do the movie reviews the way we used to do them, T, whereas we'd talk a little bit about the movie before we'd go see it, run out to the movie theater behind my house, go see it, and then come back. That used to be really cool.
We could have done that this one if I'd just gotten to Oxford a little bit earlier.
You have a movie theater close there?
I do have a movie theater close here, and it doesn't get all the American releases at the same time, but it did get V for Vendetta.
Well. V for Vendetta, what'd you think?
V for Vendetta. I liked it. I wasn't absolutely blown away like I was with Spider-Man and the X-Men.
And Batman
Begins. Frankly, the third Matrix movie had really cooked down my expectations for this one. And
ow.
And I was... How?
I said ow.
Oh, ow. Yeah.
As in an exclamation meaning pain or discomfort.
Yes, that was... that was an exclamation that I made several times during Matrix Revolutions or retardations or whatever the heck they call it. The V for Vendetta was done with a healthy respect for the original source material. not absolutely everything was adapted. About 1 5-second shot seems to have been snipped off of the ending, which would have made comics fans happier.
We'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I thought it was very strong, and particularly memorable was the centerpiece of the movie, which is pretty much the same as the centerpiece of the film, where V does some very questionable things in order to liberate his female companion from the mental blocks that a lifetime of living in a repressive society have built up within her, and where she does some extremely admirable things that stand in shocking contrast to dystopian works like 1984 and Brave New World.
I agree. I felt very much the same way about the movie. I don't think I was blown away, but I thought it was an excellent adaptation. I thought a lot of the comic book remained intact. There was an extra scene that they added, an extra disaster that might have been unnecessary. But on the whole, I feel that especially the character of V managed the transition from print to film almost completely intact, and Hugo Weaving just did an absolutely fantastic job as V.
Yes, hiring actual actors to star in a comic book movie, it seems commonplace now. It is commonplace now, but there was a time when this was against the conventional wisdom.
If I could stop you for a second, let me just finish up my summary real quick. You mentioned the 1984 aspects, and I saw those too, and I thought it was very, very... Actually, I thought it was amusing when somebody else told me, says, yeah, you know, I saw the movie and I liked it, but didn't they do a lot of that stuff, you know, in the 1984 movie? Like, funny you should mention that. This book was written in 1985. It's not actually that outdated.
Alan Moore was clearly influenced by that work when he put this thing together. It was
He also had something in for the Thatcher administration.
Yes, and you know, I've gotten to talk with some people who lived under the Thatcher administration, living where I do.
Yes, we all know too. You now live in Oxford.
Well, I'm just saying that they have choice words about it. I wasn't really all that familiar, but it's not too far off from certain things that people have been saying about the Bush administration recently, which again just goes to show that certain aspects of history do come around. I sort of wish that this movie were less timely in that respect, but that's not something that I get to pick and choose.
What, you don't? I get to pick and choose that stuff all the time, man. The world is my oyster.
Yes, well, I guess you just have a more subjective view of reality. Selective.
No, but, Hugo Weaving, excellent job. Natalie Portman, excellent job. Even all the actors whose names I didn't recognize, but I'm sure they're out there somewhere, all did fantastic jobs.
My good friend and boss, William Simons, would like me to shout out to Stephen Fry, who is apparently a god among men over here.
I thought, I want to pay particular attention to Hugo Weaving's job, since he goes through the whole movie with not once pulling off the mask and revealing his face, or in a flashback we see what he looked like beforehand, which totally would have ruined the whole effect of V. But he goes through this whole movie and manages to pull off this fantastic acting job behind a completely motionless mask. And that shows talent.
Yeah, I believe that Alan made a point about that the movie would, or the story would, lose something if V's identity were revealed.
Well, apparently at least that much of Alan Moore's rantings helped the movie. That didn't stop Alan from taking his name off the film, though, but then again, he'd take his name off of just about anything that he didn't have complete and total charge of. At least, that's the impression that I get.
I don't know. Alan has... The quote that sticks with me from David Lloyd is that Alan has very clear ideas about what he represents. That's how David summed up the difficulty of dealing with Alan about the motion picture. It might have just been a quiet disagreement if the producer, Joel Silver, hadn't announced that Alan was actually quite excited about the film. Best I can tell, Joel just doesn't speak Alan Moore. Maybe not many people do speak Alan Moore, because I get the impression that he's on a different track than people generally, which is why he's been able to come up with all the unique ideas that he has. There was either a misrepresentation or a misunderstanding there, and Alan had some choice words for the creators and the producers and everybody. he made it known that he was not a happy camper.
Alan hasn't exactly been easy to deal with in the past either. I'm only remembering this now, but back in the day when they were talking Watchmen movie, yeah, I know they've been continuously talking about Watchmen movie, but the first time they started talking about Watchmen movie, he was causing some trouble in that respect as well.
Yeah. It's not something that I particularly want to get into. You've made the point before that if you're going to buy into the existence of a movie based on the film in the first place, you got to be prepared for changes. There are certain things that just don't work in film that do in comics. There are certain things that don't work in comics that do in film. I think it was remarkable, actually, that they did choose to leave V masked, because most of the other superhero movies I've seen, and I would tentatively define V for Vendetta as a superhero movie.
Sure. If we want, we could create a new category called vigilante film, but...
The formerly masked characters end up going unmasked.
Yes. Because those movie stars, they have to show their face in the movie. They just gotta.
All the Batman get to act with their eyes. Tobey Maguire gets the Spider-Man mask torn off his face once every 20 minutes.
Especially
Wolverine,
in the second
one. We didn't even try. Sorry, what'd you say?
I counted a lot more than once every 20 minutes, but... Yeah, it's true. It's true. Hulk, as bad a movie as that was, we had all the scenes with just Bruce or whatever, but V, not anything. I mean, the most we get is a couple of close-ups on his eyes, and that was just it. Most of the time, he's just behind that mask, and really, I think that was the thing, if anything, that I was worried about, which was the most. Thankfully, though, several of the best lines of dialogue make it into the movie, which I just loved and awed and cooed and just bellowed over, I guess. I love those lines. I love them. The one about how behind this mask there is more than just flesh, but there is an idea.
And ideas are bulletproof.
It's so awesome. Mm. And the other one that was they actually put in the previews about the governments. People should not be afraid of their governments, but governments should be afraid of their people. Just another fantastic bit of dialogue.
It's a work of ideas first and foremost, and it fits in very neatly with what has been good about the Wachowski brothers over to date.
Now, they only produced and wrote this movie. They didn't actually direct it.
No, but the director was somebody who had done work on the Matrix films.
Yeah, he was an assistant director on those movies. Do we have his name in front of us?
We don't have his name in front of us, and I think that's kind of the point. George Lucas didn't direct some of the Star Wars films, but his thumbprint was clearly upon them, and it seems pretty obvious to me that the Wachowski brothers are the real adapters of this movie, and it represents a pretty neat fusion of their ideas and Alan's, and to some degree David Lloyd's. I did not like the romance.
You didn't like what?
I did not like the romance.
I tend to agree with you there. It seems to be that something Hollywood frequently inserts into movies, though.
Well, yeah, but the Wachowski brothers don't... There are many ways in which they don't play by Hollywood rules. This is one where I wish they wouldn't. Not so much because I hate romance, but because they're really not very good at it.
That, and to mention the fact that it wasn't in the original printing of V for Vendetta.
No,
it was not the way they portrayed it in the movie.
Evie had a romance in that movie, but it was with the character who got replaced by
James
Stephen
McTeague.
Fry's fellow.
That was the director's name, James McTeague.
James McTeague.
Thank you, yes. IMDb.
Yeah, thank you for that, IMDb. I'll retain that for a good 20 minutes. Poor James. It's not too late to do something of your own, James.
It's my kitty, folks.
Yes, Dave's cat making a special guest appearance.
She's so usually well behaved. I don't know what's going on with her today.
Anyway,
sorry.
There was a romance in the graphic novel, but it was not between the creepy, freakish, other than human figure and the woman that he basically takes on as his disciple. There's a father-daughter relationship.
Yes.
That's pretty clear in the
I would have described it as a father-daughter relationship too. Mm-hmm. Very similar to the, actually, you know what it should have been was, mm-hmm, it should have been like the first movie I saw Natalie Portman in, The Professional. That's the relationship I should have seen in V for Vendetta.
It's kind of awkward to remember some of the creepier scenes in V for Vendetta, some of the creepier turns that father-daughter relationship took. Not romantic, but definitely questionable. And remember that this was around the time that Alan Moore was experiencing fatherhood.
Okay, that's slightly disturbing, yeah. Now,
you'll just have to read the book if you're not picking up on this, folks.
Before T calls time on this, mm-hmm, I wanted to bring up a point that I'm still having trouble with and still not, mm-hmm, quite sure what to think of, is the fact that the largest and most significant change that I spotted in the movie was the fact that TV, Natalie Portman's character, does not pick up the role of V as she did in the comic book.
Yeah.
And the thing that drives
everyone else on the planet does, but not her.
The thing that drives me the craziest about it is, it's all there. It's all in the movie. All the setup, all the building, where V hands everything over to her and says, "This is all yours now." Really, I'm wondering if somewhere out there floating in the ether is a bit of film that has her putting on the mask and saying, "Welcome to the Shadow Gallery."
There just has to be because they even went to the trouble of adding this detail that suggested she was had experience with playing the Shakespearean role of Viola, which is largely known for being one of Shakespeare's most famous women impersonating men roles. Of course, in Shakespeare, all the parts were played by men, but Viola was a woman who, within the story of the play,
right, was a woman,
impersonated a man.
Exactly. It's like I said, it's all there. It's all there. The only thing that they're missing, and this is really minor, is the arbitrary scenes that Alan threw in of her in the background training. And, you know, and like building herself up. But in the comic book version of it, she takes on the role of V, but a different kind of V. Where V was the revolutionary, the reactionary, she was gonna be a new type of V. She was gonna be the protector of this new regime that V helped bring about.
Destructive force versus constructive force.
Exactly. The creative after the creation after the destruction. And they it's like the movie just cuts and just goes to credits. And I'm like, no, wait. You were supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure how I feel about that. I don't feel that it terribly ruined the movie, but I'm wondering what effect that really has on the overall sense, motive, and mission of V, that she doesn't pick up the mask. That it's instead picked up kind of universally by all the people. It's tenuous.
Well, it's an interesting idea, and an idea that the Wachowskis have played with before. The fact that, or the idea that there will be one savior at the beginning, but ultimately it will become incumbent upon everyone to be their own savior.
I don't think that was entirely different from what's in the V for Vendetta comic book. I don't think it's all that great a shift. It's just that in the novel, you had, okay, everything's back in the hands of the people and they're in charge of their destiny, but just in case, you know, we've got this added protection here. There is still somebody watching to make sure we go the way we want to go.
Yeah, whereas the movie argues that, you know, the hero figure will wither away. He's made himself obsolete. It's up to everyone to be the constructive force. There is a vague feeling of disappointment. I think they kind of hit on this halfway through and forgot to
carry on through with it.
They forgot to revise the first 85% of the movie to match it properly. But it doesn't strike me as a terrible interpretation. I think
not at all.
Yeah. At this point you're probably going to have to download it off Morpheus or see it, wait for it on DVD, but
there's always those bootlegs available on the streets.
Yeah, that's true. Power to the people and all that. In the meanwhile, this is T. Campbell with a tentative but largely positive recommendation.
and this is Dave Belmore with the same recommendation, although I'm just going to say, just go out and see it. You'll enjoy it. It's a good movie, especially the knife fight scene at the end. Oh my gosh, so slick, so cool. And I'm also going to remind you, of course, to send your comments, criticisms, and other proclamations to meanwhilepod@gmail.com or post them right to our website at meanwhilepod.com.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Dave Belmore.
This is T. Campbell.
Signing off.
Signing off.